Let's get to our guest, David Kotok, CIO and Chairman of Cumberland Advisors. David, thank you very much for taking out the time on a Sunday. Well, yeah, it's a whole new week. You can get aggressively short here. You can try to ride this out to a certain degree, or you can try to be more opportunistic. What suits Mr. Kotok at the moment?
Well, Brian Reach, thank you for having me on your show right after the Jackson Hole meeting.
Pressure's on.
I'm thinking we should all get on that moon rocket because we're going to need to get away from the trouble ahead. Markets responding as expected. You just reported the picture in the futures market. And I think two things take away from Jackson Hole are important. Powell was clear, short, bitter, not sweet, and right to the point. Any doubts about Federal Reserve policy now should be set aside. But the Saturday sessions, which you just reported, the results about say the world is in tightening mode with the exception of Japan. And so the hard currencies around the world, the euro, Swiss franc, if we look around the world, we have 80 countries now tightening policy in one way or another. Japan's the only exception. And what that says is global slowdown, global headwinds. And that's what markets have to face, whether they like it or not.
Okay, definitely. But you know, that was the case before Jackson Hole. But I mean, how did he materially change the narrative in your view, David?
He reaffirmed 2% targeting. He drew a line in the sand about it. So we set aside this notion that maybe the Fed will accept 3 or 4% inflation. That's out. The second thing he said is, we may have to do this longer than market agents think. We may be in this business of tightening for a while. And then we had the Loretta Mester interview following, in which she said, look, we may be at 4% on a policy rate for a long time or for a sustained period, words to that effect. I heard all that and I took my policy target treasury yield curve above 4% on all maturities.
Yeah, that's interesting because the bond market didn't really share your view. It didn't really change too much at the long end, right?
Well, the bond market's reaction was an interesting one. When the stock market sold off, there was a flight to quality. But you just reported a key data point, in my opinion. You reported the dollar-yen rate at 137. And the yen and Kuroda's currency and yield curve control now become the only funding currency for the world. That says to me, dollar-yen, we could be 150 before this is all over. Wow. Until Japan changes policy. We've got a big transition here.
So, David, we heard from Elizabeth Warren there, the senator, and I'm wondering whether or not you think that there's a political element here that is going to start building on the Fed and on the Biden administration.
Well, I certainly expect that. Elizabeth Warren being at one end of the spectrum, but the next 2 months we have the run-up to the midterm elections. It's not clear now. There was an expectation maybe a month or two ago that Republicans would sweep both chambers. I'm not so sure about that now. In fact, one could argue the Senate may stay, not only stay, but pick up a Senate seat. I'm not so sure about the House. So that has an impact. And for sure, anything in the financial world and the Federal Reserve become convenient targets for politicians every single cycle. No reason to think this will be any different.
David, the thing is, though, that markets don't seem to mind gridlock. In fact, there's evidence to suggest that they actually quite like it.
I think you're right, Rish. I mean, if the Democrats get the Senate, pick up a seat or two, and the House becomes Republican, and that's possible, the Trump damage from all the disclosures doesn't seem to reach to the congressional races in the Republican-oriented districts. So we may have gridlock. Maybe that's a good thing. They can't do as much damage when they don't have a supermajority of either party.
Now, in terms of the hawkishness from the Fed, we knew it was there, but we got confirmation from the chair himself. And the main transmission mechanism for us out here in Asia may well be the strong dollar. The dollar gained 0.5% or so. And I'm wondering, you know, on the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index, we're bumping up against the highest levels that we've seen in many, many years. We peaked up here in 2020, made a go at it just a couple of months back, and we're back at close to 1,300 on the Bloomberg Dollar Spot. Do you think that this is the time that, you know, it's almost impossible to bet against the dollar at the moment?
I don't bet against the dollar. I see the dollar as the – you can be – anti-dollar and say it's the least worst, or you can be pro-dollar and say it's the best, the outcome is the same. When we look about the world and the structure of reserves, the dollar emerges as the choice. There's an interesting disconnect now, because reserve currencies used to function to counterbalance trade, and that worked well in an expanding globalization, integration, lower protectionism world. But the world is going the other way now. And therefore, the nature of the structure reserve currencies changes. The most reliable policy currency emerges and becomes the desirable place to hold value. And so that's very favorable for the dollar.
Well, it's not been very favorable to the euro, has it? I mean, we're sub parity, and people suggesting there's more pain in store, and they could well be right, David, given what's been happening in terms of what is likely to happen in the winter, an energy crisis which is looming larger and larger. And David, I mean, the thing is, the euro area will get it bad. So will the UK. In fact, we've got households being warned that their gas bills and power bills are going to increase by 80% at the start of October. I mean, this is really, really very worrying.
I agree, Rish. I think we're in for a rough period of time. And Mr. Putin's models and how he's applying his policy around the world is raising energy prices and making things more difficult, starving people. The Putin famine is spreading. You just talked about food earlier on Bloomberg. And that's the world that we confront. It's not a pretty picture at all. We hold a cash reserve in our U.S. equity ETF portfolio. It's about 37-38% cash. I haven't been that high in a very long time. And our sector choices are really limited now. Aerospace, defense, look at what you've been reporting about the world. Healthcare, climate, renewable, sensitive areas. No banks, no interest sensitives.
David, thank you so much for that. David Kotuk there from Cumberland Advisors. This is Bloomberg.